Corporate debt was another mirror. Many companies used the deep Federal Reserve interest rate reductions completed in 2003 to refinance their debt. Even so, the quality ratings issued by Moody's, Standard & Poor's, and Fitch were lower and overall corporate debt levels higher than they had been in 1999. Not a good sign. By 2005, leveraged buyouts, the great corporate debt ploy of the 80s, were back in the news and fattening the risky loan totals. Record issuance of low-rated bonds prompted David Hamilton, director of corporate bond default research for Moody's, to observe that this percentage of really risky debt is unprecedented. Household debt, which includes credit card balances, mortgages, and other loans, was also of growing concern. By 2005, it had reached levels that made toughening of federal bankruptcy law, enacted that April, a high financial services industry priority. Courtesy of economists at Northern Trust, Goldman Sachs, and elsewhere, a few voters in 2004 had heard fleeting references to the household deficit, an unnerving portrait of how much more American households were spending each year than they earned. In 2004, they had laid out $1.04 for every $1 of income, falling in total some $400 billion in the red. That red ink, of course, required households so burdened to make it up by taking out loans or drawing down assets. To find comparable examples, Paul Kasriel, chief economist at Northern Trust, had to go back to 1946 to 1950, a period during which Americans spent pent-up savings left from the shortage years of World War II, when stores had offered little for sale. The 21st century pattern, by contrast, was better explained by the unprecedented decline of the U.S. personal savings rate over a quarter of a century. In 1980, Americans collectively put aside a net 7.4% of national income. By 1990, that had fallen to 4.5%, and by 2005, to a record-low negative savings rate. The first steep rise in the U.S. accretion of its mountain of debt came in the 1980s. The 1990s then carried what economists call total credit market debt, government, business, financial, and household, above its previous top, 287% of GDP, in the era surrounding the 1929 crash. The transition from the stock market expansion of 1997 to 2000 into the subsequent credit and housing expansion raised the peak higher still. By 2004, total credit market debt reached 304% of GDP, the sort of Himalayan altitude generally associated with dizziness and nosebleeds. Just how worried the average American was remained unclear. Robert Marks, an enterprising New York economist, devoted a page in Barron's to an intriguing and disconcerting thesis, that by 2004, the unprecedented magnitude of credit and debt in the United States had made irrelevant the traditional focus of the Federal Reserve Board on the nation's money supply. Total non-financial credit market debt in the $23 trillion range, he argued, had effectively supplanted the $3 trillion money supply as the best guide to the actual economy. However unlikely to persuade the Fed, Marx's analysis made a strong case that the U.S. economy was regrouping around credit, debt, and the side currents of financialization. To carefully examine the pitfalls of U.S. debt, national, international, financial, corporate, and household, it is necessary to divide the overall bulk of the debt mountain into separate entities. But first, one more return to the decades before 1980 is in order. The debt mentality and problem did not just spring to life during the Reagan presidency. It gathered slowly, back in the 1960s and early 1970s, when debt creep was not yet seen as threatening. The national debt remained low as a share of GDP, while the usual small surplus in the current account meant that the U.S. international balance of trade in goods, services, and investments was still favorable, even though imported automobiles, steel, and consumer electronics were capturing a growing share of the American market. As for corporate debt, between 1960 and 1980, it soared, enlarged in the 1960s by funny money, The corporate debentures issued in a wave of conglomerate building and named for the possibility that they could become worthless if the conglomerate house of cards had collapsed.